in Nodia, specifically in Godrum, where Bhaktivinoda Thakur chose his place of bhajan, he's saying that the great personality Nityananda has made a namhata. Patiyache literally means just, hata means bazaar. So patiyache means like to spread out some cloth, like just like this. They'll take some cloth, spread it out on the floor, bring some vegetables and sell it. So that's how you make in the marketplace. Everyone comes, there's no, just spread out some cloth and sell whatever you're selling. So he's made the marketplace of the holy name for the benefit of the jivas, specifically those who are faithful. The price for buying the goods in the Namahata, the bazaar of the holy name, the holy name is being sold, and the price to pay is faith, nothing else. So taking the order of the Lord, this specifically Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave this order, and Nityananda is also in Parampara giving this order. His order, the order of the Lord, Prabhu Ragyai, Bhai, brother, beg this Magi a Bhikkha. Bhikkha means begging, and Bhikkha means that which is begged, and Magi means begging. So beg this, beg these alms. Ask everyone to chant Krishna, worship Krishna, and study Krishna's instructions. Being freed from offenses, take the name of Krishna, knowing that Krishna is our mother, Krishna is our father, and Krishna is the very life, the very wealth of our life. Krishna Shangshar Koro. I don't know how to translate that. Enter Krishna's family. Make your family life Krishna conscious. Krishna Shangshakara Charyanacha, giving up all bad behavior, wrong behavior, sinful behavior. Mercy, showing mercy to the jivas and chanting the name of Krishna. These two items, they are the essence of all religion. So that's the whole Krishna consciousness process and philosophy simplified. Show mercy to the jivas and chant the holy names. Very simple. Nityananda Prabhu preached Krishna consciousness in a very simple way. Not very complicated. Very simple. Just ask everyone. Bhaja Gauranga, Kaha Gauranga, Laha Gauranga, Namre, Jaijan Gauranga, Bhaja Sheta, Mora Pranre. He simply asked everyone that you worship Gauranga, chant the name of Gauranga, take the name of Gauranga. Whoever worships Gauranga, Nityananda Prabhu says, he is my life. So a very simplified process of Nityananda, preaching Krishna consciousness. All right, please give these sheets back so I can sing some other time with whoever I'm with. And questions, I guess. You can, if you have sheets or written questions, I can take. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadama Hyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yatah Padakamalam Shri Guru Navaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parajana Sahitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhan Vitam Scha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tatta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Ancha Kalpatarubhyascha Vipaha Sindhubhya Avacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Taitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Question number one is written here. One and then two and there's nothing there. So I'll just deal with number one. Yeah. Please. Prabhupada gave us instructions to establish Varnashram Dharma. Is it to bring karmis to our higher platform, or is there a need for Varnashram Dharma ourselves? Both. Both. There's a series of conversations with Prabhupada specifically on this subject, and he said that the Vaishnavas will take various roles to teach others, to teach the people in general. A Vaishnav may act as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, but he's not. He's a Vaishnav. So then devotees were asking Prabhupada, well, is this to instruct the public? And Prabhupada said, no, it's also needed for ourselves. And he said, Prabhupada is instructing, the Vaishnav is on the transcendental platform. He may take the role of any role, Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra, he may take that role to instruct others, but actually the position of a Vaishnava is transcendental. But then Prabhupada explained that we also need for ourselves because we're not actually transcendental. And a devotee was saying that, yes, in the course of conversations, what he was saying was, Prabhupada, yes, the Vaishnavas are transcendental, and Prabhupada, and then why are they falling down if they're actually transcendental? So both, it's for ourselves and for others. Intrinsically, the position of a Vaishnava is transcendental. One who takes to Krishna consciousness, by doing so, he automatically steps onto the transcendental platform. Because Vaishnavism is on the transcendental platform. But he may have stepped onto it, but he's not very firmly situated there. So therefore, the Varnashram organization is required for devotees also. Automatically, by taking to Krishna consciousness, one comes to the transcendental position. But to stabilize us in that position, we also need. It also helps us to have some fixed roles and functions. And it's also a natural division of society, that society is organized like that. So it just helps us to be Krishna conscious, to have this stable position. If it's clear who's doing what. On the other hand, one should never think of a Vaishnava as a Vaishnava jati buddhi. One should never think of a Vaishnava as his according to caste. That according to this is his caste or his varna designation is that is his definitive role. We should never think that, oh, this is a Brahmin. Brahmin Vaishnava, this is a Shudra Vaishnava. We shouldn't think like that, because one who's serving the motive to serve Krishna transcends one's psycho-physical condition and the occupation he may adopt due to his psycho-physical condition. That we should understand. But at the same time, a Vaishnava, according to his psycho-physical position, it's better that one who has the tendency to work in a particular way works in that particular way. That we see Arjuna, he's completely on the transcendental platform, but his nonetheless within transcendence there are varieties. So Arjuna within transcendence, his inclination was like that of a Kshatriya. So he was engaged like that, and Krishna told him that not to even think of taking up someone else's role. That would not be good for him or for others. Swadharma nitanam shriya paradharma bhayavahat. Krishna, this twice Krishna says this in Bhagavad Gita, that if one follows one's swadharma or duties according to his varna and ashram, that will be shriya, that will be beneficial in the long term. But to adopt someone else's dharma, which is not according to one's psychophysical position, that will not be beneficial. That will not help us in the long run. Now, in our Krishna conscious movement, we in the temples especially, we engage people on what is actually the totally transcendental or surrendered platform. Do the needful, Prabhupada would say. Whatever is required to be done, do it. So that is usually the training in the beginning, but after some time we find that it's... in the beginning we're trained in full surrender. But then afterwards, taking that attitude of full surrender, it's better to be engaged in a manner which is suitable for our acquired psychophysical needs. So we'll find that automatically after some time devotees gravitate to the kind of service that is suitable for them, or that they prefer to do, such as pujari or preacher or teacher or cook or whatever it may be. Now another thing that's happening is that devotees, after living in the temple, or maybe they never live in a temple, their occupation is dictated by the need to get money to live in modern life, so they may not be doing what they like to do. Whereas one thing in traditional Varnashram culture is that everyone does what they like to do for Krishna. Whereas in modern life, you may be forced by economic needs to do something that you don't really like to do. And most people in the modern world are doing things that they don't like to do, which is, it's very harmful for them, even psychologically. That they spend most of their time doing a job which, if they had to choose, they wouldn't do it. So it's very harmful, but devotees may also be forced to, by necessity, by economic necessity, to take up some occupation that they don't like. They'd rather do something else. So again, it comes back that Prabhupada was saying we should set up our own communities, and then everyone can be engaged according to their need and desire. Of course, it's not that we always do whatever we like. There may be some things that we don't like to do, even within our natural occupation. Just like Arjuna's natural occupation was a kshatriya, but it wasn't that he didn't like to fight. A kshatriya likes to fight, and Arjuna had been in plenty of fights, but this particular fight he didn't want to do. But then Krishna said, "Well, that's your duty. You have to do it anyway." Dharma is quite a complex topic, actually. It's not such an easy thing to understand. Therefore, what is dharma tattva? What is this topic of dharma? How to understand it? So, Yudhishthira Maharaj, he gave the how we can understand dharma, dharma tattva. He said that the famous verse that tarko apratishta, shruti o vibhinna. Na sabrishya yasya matang nabinham dharmasya tatvang nihitam guhayam mahajano yenagata sapanta. That if we try to understand dharma simply by discussion, it won't, by debate, it won't be established. Tarka apratishta. Shruti o vibhinna. And if we quote different shrutis or Vedic injunctions, we'll find that they clash. There are different Vedic injunctions. And then if we try to compare the opinions of different rishis, that will also cause confusion, because different rishis say different things. So therefore we have to find the self-realized person, and who within his heart the dharma tattva is established, and follow in the footsteps of self-realized persons. The dharma can actually be understood by someone who's fully Krishna conscious. That's the import of this verse. All right, anything else? Sometimes great devotees say, I am fully surrendered to your lotus feet. But whenever I think I am completely, now I am completely surrendered, the tendency is that I come proud. How to solve this? Well, it probably means you're not fully surrendered. It's easy to say. It's easy to say, but it's actually to be on that platform is something else. Anyone can say, I'm fully surrendered. Anyone can say, but to actually be, if we're fully surrendered, then if we're actually on that platform, then all the natural qualities of the soul, which are to be humble, not proud, to be compassionate, all these qualities, they naturally manifest along with full surrender. So if one is actually fully surrendered, then he won't be proud. So it's not just a matter of saying it, it's a matter of actually cultivating anukulyasya sankalpa pratikulyasya vajra. What is surrender? The six factors of surrender. Performing everything favorable for advancement in Krishna consciousness, avoiding or not avoiding, rejecting everything that is unfavorable. Pratikulyasya vajranam rakshishyatiti vishvaso, having firm faith that Krishna is protecting me. Gotridvaivaranam tata, and that Krishna is maintaining me, not going to anyone else. Then atmanikshepa, full surrender in the mind, body and words, fully engaged in Krishna's service. Atmanikshepa. And karpanya, one symptom of full surrender is full humility. So if we're feeling, I'm fully surrendered, and then if we're proud feeling like that, then that's not surrender. So it's not just saying, but we have to actually do. Prabhupada established the Sunday feast, also known as a Sunday feast of love. Yeah, in English, love feast. This term, love feast, was actually, in the first feast, it was introduced by Kirtanananda Swami. Now, so he suggested it be called a love feast, because like the hippies, it was introduced among the hippies, and as I was saying yesterday, I was giving some description of the hippies' concept of love. So it appealed to the hippies, and Prabhupada, some devotees thought it sounded a little strange, but Prabhupada approved. Okay, call it a love feast. Nowadays we can see that some Sundays are charging tickets for the Sunday feast. Is it contrary with Prabhupada's concept about the Sunday feast? There's no love in the marketplace. There's a comment here. Well, Prabhupada also approved later on in Los Angeles when Tamal Krishna Das Adhikari at the time, or Brahmachari, I'm not sure, before he took sannyas, he introduced a payment for the Sunday feast. Prabhupada also approved of that, because it was seen that some people were we find generally at the Sunday feast all over the world that many people come just before prasadam is served, and they only come to eat. So Prabhupada approved that they pay something also. And those who are interested in the hearing and chanting that goes along with the Sunday, it's supposed to be a Sunday festival, not just a feast, they won't mind paying something. And those who are just coming for eating, they will mind, but you know, let them do some service by paying. So there's no harm. It's not mandatory, but it can be also. It's approved by Prabhupada. Many ISKCON devotees, even Prabhupada disciples, are singing songs which are not sung by previous acharyas. Is this song, Radhe Radhe Govinda Govinda Radhe, is it bona fide? It's Nam Kirtan, so we can't say it's not bona fide, but personally I'd rather do Nam Kirtan as given to us by our acharyas. Is singing Radhe Radhe okay? Well, it depends who you are. If you're qualified to sing only Radhe Radhe without Krishna, I mean, it has to be on a very high platform. You have to be on a very high platform to chant the name of Radha without chanting the name of Krishna. So for us, it's probably not okay. Singing Radhe Radhe, that means that either one is on the platform of the liberated souls who glorify Radharani even without Krishna. They're imagining themselves to be on that platform. So, like I say, if you're on that platform, it's all right. If not, it's probably better to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, which is chanting the names of Radha and Krishna together. There's one, this will come out in my book on Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, where someone, he visited the first center that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur ever established before he took sannyas. He established one center in Calcutta. And one Kirtaniya came, just visited, and he started singing names of Radharani. But Siddhanta Saraswati, as he was known at the time, stopped him and he was actually mixing up. He was saying Bhuvana Mohini Radha, but he was saying this is based on misunderstanding, because Bhuvana Mohini means Durga Devi. So he was saying it's incorrect. You don't know who is Radha and you're chanting the names. And he gave a whole lecture on how the Sahajiyas are taking cheaply the name of Radharani without understanding who she is actually. And also our own Srila Prabhupada, he didn't promote that. There's one the ex Harikeshwami, who was after all very closely serving Srila Prabhupada for many years, recounted one incident where in Vrindavan Prabhupada had him sing the Mangal Arati in Prabhupada's room, and at the end Harikesh started singing Jai Radhe, and Prabhupada stopped him. Like, he was actually quite angry at him singing Jai Radhe, and he was saying this is in Vrindavan in the Brahma Muhurta with Prabhupada, who's Radharani's intimate devotee, and he stopped him from singing. You don't sing that. Now that's interesting. Why should Prabhupada stop the singing of Jai Radhe? Because Gauriya Vaishnavism is meant for serving Radha Krishna. And generally the Gauriya Vaishnava, who they sing Jai Radhe. But Prabhupada didn't approve of that. It seems that Prabhupada wanted us to have a very cautious approach. And as a matter of fact, Prabhupada didn't sing Jai anything. That was all introduced by others. We hear that Prabhupada chanted Hare Krishna and the songs of the Vaishnava Acharyas. But he didn't end kirtans with Jai anyone or anything. I have an essay on this. I think it's quite widely circulated on kirtan standards. So all these things are discussed in there. Any more questions? Yeah, I guess you can do.
Maharaj, it's about you were speaking this morning about this letter you had from KBC.
Mm-hmm.
And how are we devotees, Islam devotees, to accept such...
When I criticize some GBC members not understanding Krishna consciousness, I guess I shouldn't do that. I'm going to get in more trouble, but...
No,
what can I say, you know? Yeah. Then Siddhanta Balaya Chitte Nakaroha Halash Iha Hoite Krishna Lage Sudhira Manosh. One should not be lazy in the matter of understanding Siddhanta. In this way one's mind can become firmly fixed in Krishna consciousness. It's a matter of Siddhanta. He doesn't know what the Siddhanta is. He thinks that Vedic culture, it's just a matter of choosing to wear a dhoti or wear jeans, and it's all the same. He doesn't understand the deep significance of it all. It's like the karmis think, you know, that in the Western countries the culture evolved in such a way, and in India it evolved such a way, and it doesn't really matter what you wear. It evolved differently in different climates. But the point that I was making is that the Krishna conscious culture is not an evolved culture based on sense gratification, but it's that which is given by God Himself, and He Himself lives like this. So we are preparing ourselves to enter into Krishna Sangsakara, we just see, enter into the family of Krishna. So in Krishna's family, they dress in a certain way, and they eat in a certain way, and they talk in a certain way, and they interact with each other in a certain way, and that's Vaishnava culture. So it's not secondary. In the beginning, we may not emphasize, when people just first come, that because it may be too much for them to change one's whole cultural outlook is a very big thing. So it may be gradually introduced, and the main activities, chanting, taking prasad, they may come in the beginning. But actually, Krishna consciousness, Vedic culture is ultimately Krishna consciousness. So it's not that it's Krishna conscious. We don't need to practice Vedic culture and Krishna consciousness because they're inseparable. Krishna consciousness is Vedic culture. There may be Vedic culture without Krishna consciousness, but there's no Krishna consciousness without Vedic culture. Vedic culture in its lower stage, I explain that, I'm just saying, summarizing what I said. Vedic culture in its lower stages or in the mayic phase or in the phase of maya, it may be practiced without understanding why it should be practiced, which is, it's meant to be practiced for Krishna's pleasure. But by doing so, prepares one to accept Krishna consciousness. So one can come to Krishna consciousness without going through Vedic culture, but you can't actually become Krishna conscious unless you enter into Vedic culture, because Krishna consciousness is Vedic culture. Krishna in the spiritual world lives according to what we call Vedic culture. So it should be understood clearly that Vedic culture is that way of living which satisfies Krishna, and he himself lives like that. So we can't separate Vedic culture from Krishna consciousness. It's not possible. It's a misunderstanding. Because in the beginning stages, you know, we don't stress wear dhoti and all this. And actually, even in the advanced stage, you can wear pandant shirts and this and that. For preaching, you can do so. But a devotee naturally, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, again talking about those things which are in another song, talking about that which is favorable for devotional service, he says, Gaura Bhakta Priya Vesha Dadhamana Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhamana. He talks of wearing that dress which is dear to the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it's not Levi jeans. It's the dress which Prabhupada gave us and which he himself wore. So, Gaura Priya Vesha Dadhamana. Dadhamana means I will not just wear, but show it. Showing it. And then, Tilak Tulasi Mala Shobhaman, and decorated, looking very nice with Tilak and Tulsi Mala. So it is Krishna consciousness. It's inseparable. And those who think that it's optional, it's a serious misunderstanding. And it goes very deeply, because then they think that, well, the cultural values that go along with the Vedic culture, and which come from Shastra, which comes from Krishna, they're optional. Just like it's said that, well, because in the modern world women's roles are different, though, so we should adopt to that. But Prabhupada's idea was that we should actually, if we're living in modern society, it is like that, because women's roles are equal to men's. But Prabhupada was saying that this is, the whole society is imbalanced, and it's the whole society is artificial. So we can adopt those standards. It may seem that it's easier to adopt such standards in our society, and it makes it easier to fit into modern life. That's true, but it makes it more difficult to be Krishna conscious. So again, Prabhupada wanted to set up our own culture where these things would come naturally. And when you see and live in the culture where it goes naturally, then you won't think that it's oppressive to women or any such thing, because it's a very natural and pleasing culture. And although women's roles are in one way submissive, it's very natural for their psychophysical condition. It's very natural for a woman's psychophysical condition to have babies, which is not considered in modern life, where they think that women should have careers. Their career is more important than the baby. Is just something which gets in the way, and you get a few months off work, and then you send the kid to the kindergarten, and the baby is just an interference in the career, because you have to become the prime minister or something, or a jet pilot or something like this. But this is it's natural that women have babies. So, and babies need a lot of looking after, otherwise they turn into the horrible monsters that's like the normal citizen of the modern world. So it's totally psychologically imbalanced, and physically also very bad condition. So it's natural that women have babies, and they look after them, and they invest a lot of time in that. Their life is centered around the home, but it's not that the women don't work and contribute. They also contribute to the economy, just like at home. In any traditional culture, not only Vedic culture, they'll not only look after babies. They'll contribute to the home economy, which actually the money didn't figure in it. Money wasn't there, but the things like helping with, they'd have the kitchen garden and looking after the bees and weaving. It's all part of economic development. So it was a group effort, and men and women, they had different roles. That's all. So women are required to be protected. So it's a very natural kind of thing, but because we're brought up in this modern way of life, we think that the way modern society is set up, that's normal, but it's not, it's abnormal. And it produces abnormal people, very strange people who you know, they have very, very bad habits. So many people, they're addicted to drugs, and they have very strange sexual proclivities and very bad sexual habits, and they can't live in a stable family life. They're so emotionally disturbed that they can't live in a family life throughout their life. So it's pretty, the whole society is so bad that, but somehow or other, because we're brought up in the Western world and we think this is normal and we should adjust Krishna consciousness to it. But we end up with a bunch of normally abnormal people. What is considered normal is just very strange, and it's very difficult to be Krishna conscious when the mind is totally disturbed. So the whole Vedic culture, natural result of that, of living in this culture, is not even a matter of following it, it's a matter of living in it. And people who are living in a culture, they don't think about following a culture. It's you just live in a culture, just like people in Slovenia, they don't think about living in Slovenian culture. They're probably not even aware that there is a Slovenian culture. You live like that because everyone else does. So in Vedic culture, everyone's living that, and it naturally, the one is peaceful, and it's conducive for cultivating Krishna consciousness. But because that cultural upbringing is so deep, and unless we have great faith in Shastra and in what Prabhupada wanted to give us, then we'll think that, well, we'll, the Western way of life is better, and we'll live that, and we'll chant Hare Krishna. Now, some misunderstanding that often comes is that, well, Prabhupada made adjustments to the Western way of life, therefore we can adjust everything to the Western way of life. But it's Prabhupada made those adjustments to, as the saying goes, in like a needle and out like a plow. It wasn't that he wanted, or that he thought it was even favorable to adjust Krishna consciousness wholesale to the Western way of life. But he made certain adjustments, seeing that it wouldn't be possible for Westerners to immediately take up everything, the whole culture. But quite quickly he introduced many aspects of the Vedic culture, the dress, the food, the modes of address, Prabhu, Mataji. He introduced all these things. So, but sometimes devotees, they say, well, the adjustments that Prabhupada made, that was the standard that Prabhupada wanted to set, and that's where the cultural divide that's going on in ISKCON is coming, and that not only that was the standard that he wanted to set, but that's we should take it further, even more. That Prabhupada made these adjustments, we should make more adjustments, but rather we should. We should bring in the Vedic culture, which Prabhupada spoke about so much. And what did he speak about the Western way of life? Nasty civilization, cats and dogs. This is what Prabhupada had to say about the Western world. He didn't have a high opinion of it at all. So.
There is a tendency...
No, let me just say a little bit more about that. I made one point, and I want to emphasize it because it's a very important point, and it's a very revolution or outspoken thing to say, and it's certainly a very controversial thing to say. But my feeling is, we're supposed to say my feeling is, because you know we're not supposed to speak in an absolute manner, because that's the whole liberal ethos that we live in. There's no absolute knowledge, but actually it's a fact, whether I feel it or not, that those who are resistant to introducing this culture in our society, they don't actually have faith in Shastra. They don't have very deep faith. Or what they try to do is they say that, well, we accept the spiritual parts, but we don't have to accept the material parts. We accept Krishna as God, but you know, all this about Varnashram and different, this gender roles things, that's a very big, that's a hot topic. And you know, that's material, so that's not absolute and we can adjust it as we like. Or they think that because culture, there are different cultures in the world, and because their cultures develop, so they can be changed. But not understanding that this Vedic culture is given by Krishna in Shastra, and it's not meant for wholesale altering. It may be altered according to time, place, and circumstance, but the principles we should accept for our own good. So those that don't accept this, they actually haven't accepted Shastra in very deeply, or they're accepting it with the half chicken philosophy, and we accept the things that we like and that we don't, and therefore they can say things that they can make statements that Krishna consciousness is not dependent on Vedic culture. It means they're thinking that Vedic culture is something optional. They don't understand that Krishna consciousness is non-different from Vedic culture. And it means that they're still attached to this demoniac Western way of life, which I can't understand this at all. I don't know what it is. Maybe they go to India and they see the dirt and the flies and they think this is Vedic culture. But without going deeper, mostly Western devotees, when they first go to India, they see the dirt and the flies and they think, this is terrible, I want to get back to Ljubljana or whatever it is. But when you spend a little time, you can see beyond the dirt and the flies. That's not Vedic culture. We don't find description of dirty. We find Dwarka, a city, very cleanly kept. So another thing they often do, our cultural opponents within ISKCON, is they always like to show how India is presently degraded, which has got nothing to do with what we're talking about. It's not that we're saying that we should follow the degraded standard that India has now got, but we want to follow the actual standard that's been set generation after generation. Just like Prabhupada met one anthropologist from America. He met him in Andhra Pradesh. And he asked him what he was doing in India. And he said, I'm studying the tribal people. That's what anthropologists generally do. They study tribal people. Well, they also study modern urban people. The Naked Ape, the Human Zoo, this Desmond Morris wrote these famous books. So Prabhupada said, why don't you study the advanced people? Why are you studying the tribal? Study the advanced people in India. You can get a benefit. What are you going to benefit from studying the tribal? Actually, the tribal people are more advanced in culturally than the American jungle, city jungle dwellers. It's a fact, actually. Many of the tribes, Tejas Prabhu was telling me he was living in the jungle in Andhra Pradesh. He was sent by the American Peace Corps. So he was living there for 2 years and he found they were culturally very advanced. They would chant the names of the Lord, and the men and women would live separately, and they would only cohabit for producing children. These are tribals. So what to speak of the Brahmins? Now the Brahmins have fallen generally, but there are very high class people. Prabhupada said, why don't you study them? You can benefit from studying them. So these are some of the problems. And unless one is has a very clear understanding of all these Shastric points, and it's very easy to be misled. And then there's this whole thing about academic studies, and which yes can be used in Krishna's service, but the trouble comes when we adopt the whole way of thinking and apply it to our society. And this is it's a major problem in our society at the present time, that we're adopting the kami academic way of thinking to our society instead of the Shastric way of thinking. We should see through Shastra Chakshu. We should see through the eye of Shastra, not through the eye of someone who's blind. The blind scholars. Andha yathandai rupaniyamanas tepisha tantram urudam nibadha. The blind following the blind, they all fall into the ditch. So these things are going on. We'll often find that discussing social issues in ISKCON, they quote this sociologist and that psychologist. What about quoting Vyasadeva? He's the best sociologist and anthropologist. But they'll think, well, you know, that applies to the ancient Indian culture and it doesn't apply to modern life. We have to see what the sociologists say because they're in touch with modern life. Vyasadeva was writing for a different time and place. But Vyasadeva is Trikalagya. You can see past, present and future. That's stated in Bhagavatam, just this section we're going through, that Vyasadeva, he in trance, he saw the whole future of Kali Yuga, and he wrote the Bhagavatam for Kali Yuga. It's not that it was written only for 5,000 years ago in India. It was written for us now. Kalo nashta drishamesha purana akal dinodita. Persons who have lost their vision due to the dense darkness of the age of Kali will get light from this Bhagavat Purana. But we see that there are statements, just like someone wrote in a devotee who's in the university, he's writing for the congregational magazine in one country, saying that, well, of course in the Srimad Bhagavatam we don't have to accept everything that's said. For instance, it's the point about the description of the atoms given in the Bhagavatam has been disproven by modern science. But anyway, Bhagavatam is very good and it teaches us to surrender to Krishna, so it's very good. But we don't have to believe it all, but it's good anyway. So This was the subject of Sahotra Swami. Wrote a whole big essay on the when he saw this. It was his disciple actually, supposed to be. He wrote a whole long essay on the concept of the atom, according to modern scientists. It doesn't at all disprove they don't even know what an atom is. They don't even define an atom because it's non-definable by quantum physics, as he shows in his article. You can see this. Sahotra Swami has this weblog, his daily diary. I don't see it all. He says some of the articles. He tells me which articles are good, because he says I write every day, and sometimes it's just my excess mental energy. But some of the articles are very, very good. He's very philosophically dissecting all the bogus ideas that are floating around ISKCON and the world, which, of course, according to certain people, there's no bogus ideas, because everyone's opinion is as good. Everyone should have their own different opinion. There are different approaches to Krishna consciousness. This is the famous line. There are different approaches to Krishna consciousness, and we should respect them all. Unity and diversity. Prabhupada actually said unity and diversity. But the thing is that the diversity doesn't... I mean, there are parameters also. It's not the unity and diversity of where's the hot dogs, you know. Let's go to McDonald's and have some hamburgers, Big Mac. You know, it's unity and diversity. You see, we're also devotees. But there are parameters. There's parameter means within Shastra. We have to follow what's in given by our acharyas and according to Shastra. So within that, there may be diversity, not beyond that. Beyond that is karma, jnana, and yoga, and gross sinful life, vikarma. So we may say, well, it's all Krishna consciousness and we're not breaking the principles, but ultimately it will lead to fall down. It is in itself a subtle fall down if we don't accept Shastra and we don't accept the acharyas and we think we can invent our own way. It's just arrogance. In the name of being liberal and accepting everyone. What is this, accepting all opinions? That's Ramakrishna's nonsense. Jato mat tato pat. Prabhupada came to teach us a whole way of life. Yeah, so we should follow that. It's a simple principle. Mahajano yena gata sapanta. To follow the path given by the previous acharyas. But then, what happens after the coming of any great acharya is that, he by his transcendental power, he attracts many followers. And then afterwards, those who are less sincere, they water it down and change it. And look at Christianity. Even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, shortly after his disappearance, that's recorded by Vrindavan Das Thakur and Chaitanya Bhagavat, how there were so many people misrepresenting and taking advantage of. So I guess it's inevitable. But we should understand very clearly what is the fact according to Shastra. Study Prabhupada's books. And of course, different people will interpret in different ways. Then what to do? Then you have to. Then we come to the process of Shastric discussion. And ultimately, those who are sincere will different people will be attracted to different paths or different approaches. Moghasha, mogha karmano, mogha jnana vichetasa, rakshasim asurin chaiva, prakriti mohinin shitaha. Prabhupada translates this that those who are attracted to demoniac and what's the other word? Do we have Bhagavad Gita here in English? Probably not. And atheistic views. For persons who are attracted by such atheistic and demoniac views, they're hopes for liberation, moghasha, mogha, karmano, their I can't remember exactly the English term, their hopes for their endeavors for fruitive, their hopes of fruitive success, their hopes for liberation, it's all spoil. There's no hope. Ultimately, they, by having such atheistic and demoniac views, all their hopes are smashed. I'm saying, well, what are you talking? These are devotees. Devotees, yeah, but if we start to introduce all these karmic ideas and offensiveness, it comes very quickly. This academic, if we're not careful, then very quickly, if we enter this karmic academic way of thinking, then very quickly we'll start to offend the Supreme Lord and His devotees. By all Shastra Ninda, the Vyasadeva doesn't know about the atom. It's been disproved by modern science. So that Shastra Ninda and Vyasa Ninda, very quickly it comes. And then we have this Darwinistic anthropological outlook. We think that, well, Prabhupada was an old man influenced by the Victorian Bengali culture, and therefore he brought in all these social norms. But he doesn't, you know. Now we know that that's out of date, and we're more advanced. And these are things said by supposed to be devotees. They're actually it's the same thing as the demoniac scholars in the university say. But of course, even to use such words, our liberal friends don't like to use such words as demoniac, karmi. You shouldn't say that. They don't like even to use such words, which Prabhupada used all the time, which very clearly distinguishes who is a devotee and who is a demon. They want to merge the identity of devotee and karmi all into one, because they're living practically like karmis, isn't it? Those who are promoting these things, they're living like karmis. And little bit, Krishna consciousness becomes our religion, my religion, just like the average person, the normal person, as they say. Although I don't think they're normal, I think they're all crazy. But the normal person, they have a job and a house and a family of sorts, and a cat and a dog and a budgerigar, and there you go, there's the dog. And he's got the shoe. Happy dog. So they have what do we get to? Their budgerigar, and they have their football team they support, and they also go to church on Sunday sometimes. You see, we have our religion also. So like that, we are devotees, we have our job, and we have our wife, maybe the second or third, but anyway, it's a wife. And, what a strong smell, huh? Dog has a strong smell. So we have our wife, and our children, and our home, what else do we have? Our dog and our TV and our football team and our religion. Every Sunday we chant Hare Krishna, and that's our religion. So then the normal people will accept us more. Yes, they will. They'll accept you as one of them. That's what you want to be, not me. Krishna consciousness is different. It is different. We don't want to be part of that. Why are we dressing like this? Because one reason is we want to show we are different. This means we accept that Krishna consciousness is a better way of life than your life. This is what it means that when we wear this. That's why some devotees may be afraid to wear it. It's a statement that we reject your society. We reject everything it stands for. That's why it is important. It affects our consciousness. How we dress. This is a symbol that we accept a different culture, a different way of life. So it is important. What were you going to say? You had some question, and I. Yeah, it's all connected. Yeah.
Question of responsibility in our society, that somehow or other this management or in our day-to-day activities also sometimes we commit mistakes, and but there is no there is not institutionalized. It's not.
What's not institutionalized?
The responsibility of leaders, someone who commits mistakes. Like, for example, we have this very sad, very bad example of these children which were molested in the
school. Yeah.
Now everybody has to pay, now all world has to pay for someone's mistakes, and then some leaders knew for that, for example, but nothing was done in time. So this Monday sentiment is there, that sometimes, like for example, if you see some other institutions, like religious groups, like for example, this Jehovah's Witnesses, they have like every year expelling from their society, I don't know how many, you know, members. Those who are not, you know, fitting, who are not following the certain thing. So, and in our society, there is a, in the name of, you know, compassion, and, you know, there is, you know, some sentiment is there.
Yeah.
Everybody can do any nonsense thing, and nobody's responsible. You know,
It's a problem. It's a problem. Yeah. In the kami world, who is that? Someone was just pointing out that the head of the Bank of Ireland was found out that he was watching adult, he was going to adult internet sites, means porno, I presume, at work. It was found out. And it wasn't against, it wasn't illegal to do so, but it was against the company rules. So he was actually, they said he's like a very competent chief executive officer, very, very competent, doing a very good job, but he resigned because he felt that it was his moral responsibility to do so. He could have made a case, and you know, he could have stayed on, but he resigned. So that doesn't happen in our society. If it did, I don't know. We don't have that many leaders. Maybe because people have leadership capacity, when they see this, then they don't become attracted to join. Maybe that's one reason. We don't have leaders because they're not responsible. There's no accountability, actually. I don't know. It's a tough. I can't change the whole ethos, but it is a problem that generally people don't take, the leaders don't take responsibility for mistakes. I mean, serious mistakes, there should be something. I mean, at least they should. You'd think someone would step down at least for some time. It's a tough one. The only thing we can do is, I think in the present time is, we should try to rectify situations, but as you know and I know, it's often very difficult to rectify even glaring faults. It's very difficult because, I don't know why, but it is. And usually someone who points out something wrong, they become themselves accused of Vaishnava aparad and this and that. So I guess under the... my general outlook is that I try to set a good example and associate with devotees who are sincere and honest. And I point out some of the most glaring faults and write books in which the proper standard is established. It's a difficult path, in as much as, you know, if you're speaking up and saying this is right and that is wrong, even if it's according to Shastra, then people will be watching for any small fault. And they'll amplify it. Whereas if you say that, well, you know, everything's okay, everyone can do whatever they like, and then you can also do whatever you like, and no one will care. So, if we just say that everything's okay and everyone can do what they like, it's not actually conducive for spiritual advancement. It doesn't create an atmosphere of spiritual advancement. It's supposed to be a pushing movement where everyone's pushing each other up, and with standards that we have to come up to. But if we say everything's okay, then there's no standards. And then there's no advancement. And then it just becomes another mundane religion. So it is. It's a difficult path to in ISKCON at the present time to attempt to strictly follow what Prabhupada said is as one Tamil president said to me, it's not considered nowadays. If you strictly follow Prabhupada, it's considered unusual and wrong in ISKCON. This is one of my godbrothers, who's a town president, said to me about 2 years ago. It's a very strange situation. But that's it. It's a difficult path when we have to. Churasya dhara nishita duratyaya. It's like this, the razor's edge. But it's the only path, because if we just merge into I'm okay, you're okay, then we're not going anywhere. We have to take the risk to be Krishna conscious. And I also feel, especially as a sannyasi in Prabhupada's movement, that it's my duty to try to set things right as much as possible. And it's not easy, and you know, accused of being arrogant and so many things, but I mean, it's just a matter of pointing out, this is what Prabhupada gave, and this is what we have. Now, are the two things the same? If not, then we should rectify it. But to point out such things generally is not appreciated nowadays. But I'm not going for the general appreciation. I want to get Prabhupada's appreciation. I pray that he may be satisfied. Difficult times, no doubt. But like that, keep good association and stick to the proper standards. And we, whatever else anyone may do or say, then we can't go wrong if we do that. We'll get the mercy of the acharyas. We may not be popular, but we'll get the mercy of the acharyas. In Slovenia, we don't have a Krishna conscious school for our children. What is your opinion on sending our children to state schools? Well, the best thing is to have a school for children. Again, it all comes with the whole community, living on the land. It's a whole package. It solves all the problems. We have to accept a little problem of living in a muddy atmosphere and not having money for buying ice cream and things like that. So there are some difficulties, but and it is a difficulty to set it up, seeing as we don't have experience, but just this, setting up the community, then everything comes. Of course, the demoniac government, they may not allow you to have your own Krishna conscious school. That may also be there. In the present situation, we don't have a school for our children. Well, we can start one, at least a Sunday school. Is that there? You have Sunday school for children? You have that? Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to be too long in the future. Soon. Yeah, okay. That's next month. Okay. All right. And the next best alternative is homeschooling. Not allowed. So what? Then you have no choice.
There is some gurus propagate this Waldorf or other private schools.
But it's the same thing. It's just, you know, it's a different kind of slaughterhouse. That's all. Yeah. They give a better material education. That means it's a more intense slaughterhouse. Yeah, you get personal care from the people who are very kindly helping them to go to hell. Yeah. The butcher first he makes them fat and then he cuts their throat. So he's looking after them very nicely.
The walls are nice.
The walls. And you have to pay money for it too, right? Probably, yeah. Probably is. It may be less intensely degraded. But the village school is usually only for the small children, and then the big children have to go to the town, is it? But in the village, once they get to teenage, then everywhere there'll be drugs and sex and everything. Pretty tough. Very sad situation that they don't have that. That's why it's required to. How to remain or become enthusiastic in the Sankirtan mission. There are many how-to questions. How to be humble. How to be determined. How to this, how to that. One generic reply to all these questions is to associate with devotees who have those qualities. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. One's desires form according to one's association. So you associate with devotees who are enthusiastic, and automatically by their association you'll become enthusiastic, and you see what they're doing and you do it. It is said that Krishna forgives all aparads, such as nama aparad, sevara aparad, but if we do Vaishnava aparad, Krishna never forgives. No, he does forgive. But if the Vaishnav releases us, then Krishna also releases us. If the Vaishnav forgives, then Krishna also forgives. It's not that Krishna goes on not forgiving after the, but first he wants that the Vaishnav shall release us. If we were in association with a person who was doing aparads, what must we do now that would help us minimize the reactions? Is asking forgiveness enough? What is the best way to behave? And is there a possibility to progress further in our spiritual life? Well, to overcome Vaishnava aparad, yes, if we've specifically offended anyone, we should personally ask their forgiveness and try to serve them. And if it's general, if we've in general been offending Vaishnavas, then we should instead have the habit of praising them. And that's very important also. Like now I've just been talking about how there are devotees who are becoming involved in different ways of thinking, and we have to be careful also, because after all they are devotees, and although they may be imbibing values from the demoniac society, if we have a wholly critical attitude, then that may be harmful for our own spiritual life. So it's a fine line between discriminating and offending. We have to be very careful. I've seen devotees, and I've been warned about this myself also, that devotees who are critical of others, even with valid criticisms, they have fallen down due to developing an overly critical mentality. So it's important to not develop an overly critical mentality while maintaining firm discrimination at the same time, and associate with and praise those devotees who we find inspiration from. And it's a very bad situation. We don't find inspiration in any devotees. Then we're in trouble. So I guess I should administer some of this medicine to myself. I just appreciating Lokanath Maharaj was here, and his enthusiasm for non-stop speaking about Krishna and chanting the names of Krishna. And he's taken time off in the last few years for deep study and studying Sanskrit, and he's obviously become very deep realizations of Shastra. When he's speaking, it's not just something that came out of a book, but he also has insights that have been revealed to him within the heart. So that's very wonderful, isn't it? And he's traveling all over the world and inspiring people like that, inspiring devotees in Krishna consciousness. I was just in Lithuania, and Niranjan Maharaj, his kirtans are so wonderful. You see, kirtans can be very wonderful. There's a lot of energy put into them. They're very musically wonderful. But it's something to really wonderful kirtans. They come not just because we have a lot of energy and we want to let it out. But kirtan doesn't actually take place in the tongue or the throat. Kirtan begins here. The real kirtan is coming from the heart. The real glorification, it's glorification of Krishna. And actually ecstatic kirtan means that which is from devotees who actually have the fixed in their heart that attitude of wanting to please Krishna. So I always means once a year, practically I'm in the association of Niranjan Maharaj at that Lithuania festival, and his kirtans are always very, very inspiring, because they are coming from a purified heart. And his preaching he's always glorifying pure devotional service. He's always speaking about pure devotion, free from material desires. So like this, always emphasizing the ideal, which his heart is, obviously his heart and his intelligence is captured by this ideal of this wonderful ideal of pure devotional service to Krishna without any personal desire. So like that, we can, it's glorify Vaishnavas. It's a very purifying process. And we don't have to glorify only, it's like you look up at the big gurus. You can find also, there's so many, everyone who is serving Krishna, that is praiseworthy. We have here, I want to speak more about that on Sunday, but I can say now also that it's very, very wonderful that this whole ISKCON in Slovenia was in a very confused condition just a short time ago, but there are various factors of why it's becoming very steady and normal according to real Krishna conscious standards now. But we have to especially note the contribution of Ananta and Lalit Govinda Prabhus, who in the difficult situation, they moved into the temple and they gradually, by patience, very patiently, they went on with their Krishna consciousness, and gradually the whole situation is becoming very favorable again. So that's something very wonderful, which I think all the devotees are appreciating. Ananta also, of course, he could have gone on with a career and not taken on all this trouble. He could have just, he had his university degree, and but he stepped into the troubled situation and took up that difficulty, and by his gradual service, by the very sattvic and with a very much service-oriented mood, cooperating very nicely. Of course, Ananda is very young, both as a devotee and as a person. He doesn't have much experience in the world at all, but Lalit Govinda is a very experienced, so the combination of both of them is very good combination, and we can see how things, that Krishna consciousness goes forward on the basis of Krishna consciousness. It's we can make different management schemes, and I remember back in the 80s there was this scheme of vertical management and horizontal management, and some kami management scheme that, and you have to have a university degree to understand it all, but ultimately everything works if there's Krishna consciousness, and even if the management isn't very professional, everything goes on very nicely if people are Krishna. I'm not saying that if we're Krishna conscious, I'm not saying that we shouldn't have system, we should try to manage in it as best a manner as possible. But I've seen, just like Tribhuvanath Prabhu, who's very greatly loved devotee, passed away just, 2 years ago. So, I mean, he didn't have any management schemes. He joined when he was 14 years old. He was an orphan from Dublin, and he didn't have any education or anything. I mean, he was literally a street boy. He was living on the streets. And he came over to London, and he, as soon as he saw the devotees, he wanted to join. I mean, he's completely a devotee from
definitely from a last life. And they didn't let him in the beginning. He had to sleep out. He just slept outside the temple, on the street. And so then they let him in. And within about 2 weeks or something, he was actually managing the temple. He didn't have the post of temple president, but he was doing so many services and organizing, and not by, you know, okay, no, you do this, but he would, but just he was so enthusiastic to serve, and then the responsibilities naturally fell onto him, and he took it up in a manner, in such a pleasing manner, that everyone was very happy to cooperate with him, and no one could say no to him because he was so charming. Maybe then about 1 month or two months. Actually, managing the temple in those days was very easy because there was the morning program, the evening program, and midday prasad. And the rest of the time, everyone was out chanting Hare Krishna in the streets. That was the program. And then once a week, they'd go to the and pick up all the vegetables from the market. And they didn't have any money, so there's no money to fight over or manage. And that was it. So his management was, you know, getting everyone to clean up the temple and get prasadam served, and then out on the street. They'd go up, the Berry Place Temple was at one end of Oxford Street, so they'd chant up to the other end, which is, how long is Oxford Street? About 2 miles or something. Up to one end, and then they'd cross the street and come back the other end. And then they'd come for midday prasad, and then they'd go out again, up one side and back the other side. Then they'd come back for the evening arati and class, and then you know, and then up the next morning, and that was it. And on Sunday they'd have a feast, and that was it. So then he organized his festivals program, and I mean it was he was actually very organized, but not in what you'd call a professional way. But just, it all came from his character. We can't imitate that, of course. That's why we have to have management systems, because he was a charismatic leader. But in the best of ways. When we say charismatic leader, we usually think of someone who's putting on a show to exploit people. But he was actually, by his just tremendous Krishna consciousness, he carried everyone along. And he mostly, the devotee, I mean, they wouldn't be very happy if I said this, but mostly he attracted all the kind of, you know, all kind of wild and wonderful kind of devotees to come and serve him. Not that he didn't think of serving him, but to help him in his service. You know, all the ones that no one else could engage. And he engaged them all, you know. So all the difficult types, or the wild types, and like that. So we can't imitate that, but that's just to demonstrate the point that the real leadership comes from Krishna consciousness. And we need systems also, and it's good to have people who are good in management, but real leadership means Krishna consciousness. Everything else follows from that. Okay, I'll finish there. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. If you have more questions, you can write them down and think about it. And if we run out of questions, well, we have plenty of songs. So, you can always sing more bhajans. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.